Hi, everybody. I am going to start. Oh, and first of all, my name is Maureen Bezold, and I am a faculty member at Western Illinois University. And for some of you, it's a really tiny place. We have 32,000 people in our entire county. For other of you, that's really big. I know for some of you, that's really big. But I'm going to tell a couple stories to start out my presentation that are directly relevant to what I'm going to be talking about. First, I have a colleague who on very regular occasion will come storming into my office. Because I typically leave my door open, she'll come storming into my office, and some horrible something or another has happened to her that day or later, you know, or that evening something horrible is going to happen to her because this person's, I hate this person, they just did this, I hate this policy, they just did that with that policy, on and on and on. I have another colleague who is absolutely the most delightful person to work with I have ever worked with, very supportive of, you know, ideas and what do you want to talk about and, you know, that's a great idea, let's see if we can make that work and so on. Now, how many of you can relate to both of those people? Okay. All right. So those are colleagues. And as a professor in a little college town, I happen to live beneath some college students. Oh, you're all laughing already. You know what I'm going to say. So, my college students work in bars, the ones that live above me. So they come home at bar time, and sometimes that's 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and then they're up making all kinds of ruckus until one day it was until 6 in the morning. Okay? And I really like my sleep, you know, I really like it, and I don't get it, I get crabby. That's just the little bit of what they do. They will leave their beer cans on the stoop regularly. They also happen to have a dog upstairs that they don't always get home in time to take out for a walk. This poor dog. So what do they do? The dog messes in the house. What do? They pick it up in paper towels and toss it in the yard. Oh, yeah. So my public health self is going, oh, my God. Right? And then the other night, okay, so it's 10 o'clock, and the volume on whatever it is upstairs that they're listening to is so loud that the light fixtures in the ceiling are vibrating, and I can feel it, the bass in my chest, okay? I'm just not too happy, okay? So my lovely landlord said, you know, we're going to move you. I'm moving the moment I get home. I'm moving. They have a place I can move. It's across the street. We got a way to deal. All right, so keep those two stories in mind, colleagues and then students, because students are my client, my customer, however you want to call them. All right, keep those two stories in mind, and here we go. So, in good times and in bad, emotional labor and public health agencies. Disclosures, we have absolutely nothing to disclose. Jamie Johnson is the colleague I was telling you about earlier, quite a wonderful person to work with, and he was not able to make it. All right. So we've got a couple learning objectives for our presentation. First, to explain some of the workforce challenges in the U.S. I'm guessing some of you know those very clearly, what those are. And then to define some of the stresses facing the public health workforce and to demonstrate the need for change in organizations that might mitigate some of the negative impact of emotional labor. And I will define that, so be patient with me. And then to identify human resource management objectives that contribute to a positive working environment. I have 3 degrees in business, so forgive me for going to the business world. And I then have an MPH. This idea of formulating policies that might help promote positive relationships among coworkers. Okay. And that's the focus here is coworkers. Can't do much about those clients and customers. okay, so current workforce challenges. I'm sure a lot of you know this stuff. At the State Health Department level, we have an aging workforce, and this is all from ASTO. Average age is 47. Average age of new hires is 40. By next year, over 50% of some State Health Department workers will be able to retire. So for all of you young folks in here, be happy. And then for severe shortages, we have severe shortages in public health nurses, in epidemiologists, in environmental health workers, and we have other things that we're facing, right? Budget constraints. And I also spent some time working, not only was I a business professor in a previous life, I also spent some time working in a local health department in emergency preparedness. We have a lack of competitive wages, right? We all know that, too. There's a lack of visibility for public health careers. It wasn't until until 2005 that I even had heard of public health, okay? Not until 2005. And then we have pure prohibitive bureaucratic hiring processes. This is a real turnoff. Yeah, you guys laugh, uh-huh. This is a real turnoff for new hires. You know, you can go in private sector and get a job in 2 weeks in some instances. And to go through a 6 and sometimes 8 month process, that's really a turnoff for people. Okay, so we got some challenges. And then the economy's impact, we all know this really sad news too, right? State health agencies lost greater than 15,000 jobs since July of 2008. 33% have instituted mandatory furloughs. My health department that I worked for was very nice with those mandatory furloughs. They attached them to holidays, so we got an extra day on Memorial Day, July 4th, Labor Day. So we got an extra day of vacation. 46% have experienced layoffs. We were going through rounds and rounds and rounds of layoffs, and everybody was like, oh my God, is it my turn this time around? 48% have cut whole programs, and 55% have budgets in FY10 that were smaller than the FY9 budgets, which were smaller than the FY8 budgets. 87% have lost staff due to attrition, and 89% have had to reduce services offered by existing programs. So we got a whole lot of mess going on. Continues. That was just the state folks. Now we got the local folks. 34,000 lost jobs in 2008, 5,400 lost jobs in the first half only of 2011, and on and on and on. It's just kind of ugly. Okay, so what does this do? Takes an emotional toll on the people at work, right? Takes an emotional toll on us when we go to work. Some of us go to work and all our colleagues have been laid off, and we don't do anything. The research shows that we don't do anything because we're freaked out by that. We get frozen. We don't do anything. And when people are facing layoffs, you would think they'd work their butts off to make sure people know that they're really valuable, really valuable. Don't lay me off because see what a fabulous worker I am. That's not the reality. People don't. Again, they get frozen. They're like, holy shit, what's going to happen here? They don't do anything. Okay, so then, emotional work, is required of public health workers if residents, because our goal is our residents, right, the people that we're helping with all our programs, if they are to have a positive interaction with us, public health workers, we need to do some work up here, even though we're facing the potential of being laid off tomorrow. Okay. So, emotional labor, then, is the effort it takes to display the emotion sanctioned by our organization. Okay, our organization says, we have to talk nicely to our coworkers, even if we want to tell them to go take a flying leap. Okay? We also have to be generally pleasant to the residents we're working with. If we don't want them to call up the mayor and complain, that's what they would always do in the health department I worked in. The mayor would hear about it, and then it'd be going on down the line, and oh, you did not want the mayor to have to call the director of the health department. So what we do is we follow these display rules, We follow the display rules. And display rules define what is acceptable workplace emotions. Okay, acceptable workplace emotions. So again, we all know tacitly what they are. We might not be, they might be obviously spelled out. So we have covert and overt rules. The covert rules are the ones that literally sometimes they'll give you a script. I had a script at one point on how I was supposed to talk with people that would call the health department. Here's the script. Here's what you say. We had a script. The overt ones are the ones that are discussed in the lunchroom. Okay, you really don't have to do that. All those rules that we learn as we talk to people and we're socialized in the organization informally, those are the covert ones. We also engage in something called surface acting. And surface acting is is the Walmart worker that's going, "How are you today?" as they're scanning, right? They clearly don't care how you are, but they have to say it. That's what they're told to do. That's surface acting. Deep acting is the person that actually says, "So how are you today?" And they might not be quite on the same page with you, but they're working hard to get there, to be upset just like you're upset about some ungodly thing that happened to them. You're working hard to really feel what they're feeling. So we do both of these. And then there's true emotional expression. We might all be completely aghast at whatever it is that happened, truly aghast at whatever it is that this person has had happen to them. We might actually feel that same emotion. The research shows that people who do surface acting tend to have the highest levels of burnout and stress related to work. Because they're working really hard and they just don't care. People who do deep acting, though, are shown to have greater levels of job satisfaction than those that do the surface acting. Because they're really trying to get there. They're really honestly engaged, honestly trying to get there. Okay, so negative outcomes of emotional labor in the workplace. We have a lot of them. Burnout, decreased job satisfaction, substance abuse, distress, headaches, absenteeism, presenteeism. You're all familiar with presenteeism. Have we ever been presentee person yourself? Yes, right. And then depression and cynicism. Okay. Positive outcomes: employee engagement, job satisfaction, dedication to the work, and absorption in the work of public health agencies. And this is speculation, that last one, for me, because there is no literature on this in public health workers. Zero. And so that's speculation. And I'm guessing public health workers do a little bit of emotional labor based on what I've defined. Yes? Yeah, right? I know some of the nurses that I worked with did when they would go to, do home visits, and they would have, people pull weapons on them. There's a little emotion labor involved in that. Okay. The literature suggests that structural changes need to take place to minimize the emotional labor that are required when interacting with coworkers. Nelson, how much time do I have left?
Just to have 8 more minutes.
8? Oh, I can slow down. For management folks, and remember I have that PhD in business management, structure does not refer solely to the hierarchy and the reporting structure of an organization. It does refer to programs, policies, and procedures in work, including that hierarchy that we see. Joe reports to John, who reports to Sue. That's part of structure from the management perspective, but it's just a small part of it. To ensure those positive results and to minimize the emotional labor when it comes to interacting with coworkers, so that our workers don't have to spend their emotional energy dealing with our coworkers, so we have even less to deal with our residents that we're trying to assist with our programs, there are things that can be done. One is to try to develop commitment to those display rules. if we have workers who are not buying into the fact that you need to say, hi, how are you today, we're not going to minimize that emotional labor required. Another thing is to reward emotional labor. I'm guessing none of you have job descriptions that even really talk about this idea of the emotional work involved in your job, other than to say, oh, and must be pleasant to coworkers. You know, I mean, we have some job descriptions that literally say that, but you aren't rewarded for it either financially or with a pat on the back that says, you know what, you handled that really well. That doesn't happen so much, so it should be rewarded. And then to minimize role conflict. People face role conflict, the idea that they have two separate roles that they're trying to do, and what do you do? How do they come together in a way that minimizes the effort that they have to take? So this is particularly true of people who were part of a group of people. Let's say we have a group of public health nurses, and then someone's promoted to manager of those public health nurses. They'll have some conflict. I'm not part of the group anymore. I have to act as a manager, but this is a challenge for me. So to try to minimize that role conflict in some way. And then procedures, we need leaders that are emotionally in tune. I have worked in places where that leader was so not emotionally in tune. It was just, they were completely unaware of where their workers were. And just recognition of where workers are is really important in minimizing that emotional labor at work. So, again, to continue ensuring those positive results, structural changes to minimize negative outcomes associated with interactions with residents. I can't tell you how many times I saw public health workers get dressed down for, you know, doing something so minimal when it came to dealing with residents. And that's certainly not a way to motivate someone to do better the next time. You know, slicing them down is not the way to go. Then resources, provide people resources to actually do, to the extent that you can. Obviously, we saw before, there aren't so many resources to be had, but the resources that they need to actually interact positively with their residents. And then autonomy. The literature shows that there's not a lot of latitude in expressing emotions. A lot of the research on emotional labor has been done with 911 workers, call center workers, with corrections officers, and these folks have really tough jobs. They have really tough jobs, and the 911 people have no opportunity in most circumstances to even just take a walk away from their desk and say, holy shit, that was hard to deal with. You know, you get 911 workers hearing people shoot themselves on the phone, you know, and they don't even have a chance to walk away from their desk and get themselves, you know, a chance to just breathe. So we have to have some autonomy in how we do express emotion within context of the organization. Providing feedback is really important. Again, the, you know, gee, you're doing a great job, or, you know, here's how we can deal with this situation. Feedback, broadly speaking. Learning opportunities. People actually need to learn how to manage some of those emotions so that stress level doesn't get completely out of line, completely whacked up. Concluding thoughts. So, external factors take a toll on our public health workforce. Workers engage in emotional labor when they're dealing with coworkers and with residents. And public health agency structural factors can either minimize negative outcomes or contribute to those negative outcomes. And we need to look at those rules, policies, and procedures to make sure they minimize the emotional labor we have to do at work with our coworkers. So we do have reserves to deal with our customers and our residents. There's nothing done in public health so far. That's the next step here, is to talk with public health workers and see if, in fact, this applies to public health workers. My guess is yes, it does, just offhand. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.